The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Mr. Gates, Steve Futterman with CBS News. I'd like to ask you a two-part question. First of all, do you think it is appropriate for a candidate's character to come under a microscope in a campaign? And secondly, you are basically now in a he said, she said situation. She's saying something, you're saying something. They're both diametrically opposing each other. As distasteful as it might be, would you be willing to do a lie detector test to prove your honesty in something like this?
Even yes.
Though I'm sure. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, I absolutely would.
Shocking.
But I'm not going to do that unless I have a good reason to do that.
There it is. Herman Cain defending himself from the most salacious attacks I've ever seen in my life. As I said to a caller in the last hour here on the Savage Nation, this reminds me of what I read went on in some southern states of the United States of America, maybe in the early part of the last century, where people accused blacks falsely of rape, and then they hung blacks and lynched them. This is a lynching. You're watching it, and it's being conducted by white trash women in cahoots with some of the most dangerous people this country has ever seen. This is an orchestrated smear campaign coming, no doubt, both from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. Why do I say it? Because it's obvious. This man is an independent who came from nowhere. He was not anointed by the big shots who run the Republican Party. And they're doing this to him because they don't want him to grab the reins of this nation's treasury. Because God forbid an honest man should grab the reins of this nation's treasury. God forbid the American people should not be fleeced for four more years. And so I think that it's likely that it's coming from both parties, the power structure, as it were. And having watched this today, I was both heartened by Cain's honesty and his courage, by the way. I don't know why his handlers or the lawyer didn't use the fact that he is a stage 4 cancer survivor. I think they missed an opportunity. Maybe Herman Cain doesn't want to rely upon being a victim. Maybe he's even a bigger man than I think he is. But you do know he's a stage 4 cancer survivor. Now, if I thought that this would have some effect upon the vermin drug addict degenerates who are doing this to him, I would say so. But I don't think so. They have no heart and soul. By what they're doing to him, whatever shred of decency they may have had has gone out the window. I've never seen anything like it. He raped my Jenny. Why, who? Who did that, Mrs. Jones? It's that black man over there. He raped my Jenny. Go get him. So Jenny was the slut in the town. And then she was found out to be the slut. The mama said she lost her virginity because that black man over there did it. Make no mistake about it. You are watching the lynching of a black man. But you don't understand what you're watching. Because you have been so brainwashed by the illiberal, illegitimate, liberal media that you actually think that this might be true. I don't believe it could possibly be true. So you say, well, there's four women, it must be true. Why must it be true? The man was a high-profile black man in American corporate culture when there were not a lot of black men at that level in American corporate culture. And there were a lot of white women who hated black people. And they figured the best way to get the black man is to accuse him of what they think the public thinks of black men. Now, how many times do I have to remind you if that creature, that white trash that we saw yesterday who had her hair redone and the lipstick, I mean, you know that Gloria Allred paid for the hairdo. We read that she has financial trouble. We read that she lived in a building with Obama's number one advisor, David Axelrod. If that's not enough for you, we know that they redid her for the big appearance yesterday. To believe this woman, if what had happened, to believe that she would not have gone to the police, stretches the mind even of the lowest of the listeners. I can't believe that you would suspect that for 1 second, that a woman like this would not have gone to the police. That's crazy to even believe that. Anyway, I think that Herman Cain did a fine job. I think that we see that there's nothing to any of this other than a smear campaign. And I don't understand why his attorney or he himself, well, he couldn't do it, but his attorney could have said, and by the way, Mr. Cain is a stage 4 cancer survivor. And we're very impressed with the fact that he refuses to quit. I couldn't take it. I'll be very honest with you. I could not take what this man is living through. Could you? Could you take it? Could you take what Herman Cain is taking? I actually see a stronger man than I thought was there. I see a man could take this job. Actually, he's going through he's a very religious man. He's a part-time Baptist minister. He probably is relying upon his wife and Jesus for his comfort and his sustenance, something that you may not even understand, where he gets the strength to put up with these false accusations. This man is proving that he can walk through fire itself, that he can walk through hate and he can walk through false accusations and come out taller than before. This man is more qualified to be the president of the United States than he was yesterday. This man could take false accusations. This man could take hate. This man could take threats. And guess what? He came out of it with a smile. This is the kind of man we need in the White House. Not a thin-skinned, suspicious type of personality who bristles at any criticism, who bristles at any idea that he may have done something wrong. This is the opposite. This is the alpha and omega of individuals. And I frankly think that Herman Cain would make a perfectly fine candidate and hopefully president of the United States. Whether or not it comes to that, I don't know. I have no idea whether the machine will destroy him. This is the most powerful machine in the world. After all, if they could wreck the Middle East, if they could take an ally of 40 years like Mubarak and destroy him and wreck Egypt and see churches burning in Egypt and Christians being driven out of their homes and get away with it, if they could hunt down Mr. Gaddafi and murder a world leader, murder a man who was begging for his life, and have Hillary Clinton come back and laugh and say, "We came, we saw, he died," and get away with it. Just think of what they're capable of doing.
Savage.
Officials have released a list on 93 complaints against the protesters. The complaints include drug and alcohol use, littering, and bathing in county bathrooms. Artwork has also been vandalized, but county officials can't link that to protesters. Now, the most shocking accusation is that officials found 200 pounds of human feces near the County Veterans Memorial Building, which is just across the street from, right across the bridge, excuse me, from the camp.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Now, I believe Freud's theories about sex are as relevant as ever. And so, although some of them have undergone revision, many current psychologists think that the founder of psychoanalysis was completely wrong about everything, had everything backwards, and they've tried to undo what he did. It's part of the deconstruction of Western civilization, by the way. By bringing down Freud's theories, so they think, they can bring down and collapse all of Western civilization and completely turn civilization on its head. There are certain things you can't change, and you cannot take a giant and turn him into a Lilliputian, particularly if you yourself are a Lilliputian and not a giant. The fact of the matter is, sexuality has a central place in our psyche. So you say, well, okay, I don't want a college lecture today on the Savage Nation. I've heard all this, or I haven't. I'm not interested. Talk instead about Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum. I don't want to do it. I mean, I am so bored of politics right now. You know, what'll be will be. Whoever runs will run. When the election comes around, I'll talk about it, right? I'm not going to talk about these you know, who's going to run now? I mean, I'm not on Fox News where that's my bread and butter. I think that I would rather talk about something positive, which is, if you're driven by sexual thoughts or urges, how have you sublimated them into something positive? I think that's what's important to think about. Not whether you're sick, okay, but how have you channeled your hypersexuality, so to speak, into something positive? Okay, that's an important discussion, because I would argue that all of civilization is built upon sexual energy, if you want to take it from a strictly... I am probably strictly, from a psychological point of view, a Freudian in that regard, even though I'm not a therapist at all. I never pretended to be, nor do I want to be. But if you were to ask me what school of psychology, Savage, do you follow, it would be Freudianism, because he was a giant. He was the founder of psychoanalysis, but even he had his limitations, and he acknowledged it. Even he once said, if I remember correctly, that not everything was about sex, and he once commented, you know, he said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Okay, so let's not get carried away, you know what I'm saying? He understood that there was a limitation even to his theories. Now, I know many of you don't agree with Freudianism, but that's really not what the show is about right now. It's how do you use the energy, your sexual energy. New York City, WOR, Nando, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, you know, I'm a psychologist in New York City, and I agree with you that Freud was a giant in a lot of ways, but he did get some things backwards. For example, he assumed that the disturbance was sex-based. But a lot of people get disturbed first and foremost about other things like ego, their status, their anger, their rage, and then they employ all kinds of methods to...
Well, let me see. I'm not here to dispute better. You because you... Hold it. I'm not going to dispute because you know more about it than I do, but I want to see if I can follow your ideas. You said that the anger and the rage control them, but what drives the anger and rage is what I'm interested in.
I think... From a modern cognitive behavioral point of view, it's the stuff they tell themselves. You know, you and I can look at the same situation, and we tell ourselves different things. If your premise is one of, let's say, an unconstrained vision, you're more liberal. If you have more of a constrained, tragic view, you're more conservative. So both of us can look at the
Wait a minute, I like it. That was pretty glib of you. Wait, yeah. I want to hear that again. Let me hear that again. That was beautiful. Let me hear it again and see if I agree with it.
Well, this is a theory that's been out there, I guess, for like sort of a dozen years or so, which is that some of us have sort of a tragic view of life, which is that there are constraints on the world, you can't have everything you want, and those people tend to become conservative.
Hold on, let me think about that. I have that viewpoint, but I don't think that's why I'm a conservative. But okay, now give me the liberal viewpoint.
That's one factor. But then another factor is if you believe I can have it all, in fact, I deserve it all, and somebody should provide it, otherwise the world is wrong and unfair towards me, then you tend to become more liberal.
You mean that the world owes you a living, in other words?
Yeah. Right. Now, that's
all right.
But I would
just add to this, since we're getting into the strictly political, that I was speaking with a boatsmith today, a man who came out and fixed some wood on my boat today. He's an expert in mechanics. And we were working together. I mean, I was watching him. He was taking out broken screws and fixing a broken rail. And he's a businessman. And he said to me, every businessman he knows on the Sausalito waterfront is ultimately a conservative politically because they don't like hyper-regulation and they hate high taxation. And they all love my show, is what he was saying. So in other words, even though they live in this liberal area of San Francisco and they work on the Sausalito waterfront in the boat industry, anyone in business recognizes that big government is against them. I don't think that has anything to do with emotions or sexuality.
But that's right. And people can get disturbed and then use sexuality. But even there, you know, if you have a moral view, which is everyone should be equal, then you're going to view injustice as anything that makes more money for one.
Well, I don't believe that. I don't believe everyone can be equal.
Right.
All we have to do is look at a basketball game and understand that there are some people who are better at basketball than others.
Right. Well,
okay, and then I apply that to every sphere of the world. You're not going to take everyone and turn them into a nuclear physicist, for example, or a surgeon. That's, you know, absurd. That's absolutely the communist point of view. And you know that that went on in communist China after the revolution, which is what scares the heck out of me. It makes me sick when I listen to these unrequited leftists who tell me that every moron in America can become a brain surgeon if only they were given the chance. That's utter nonsense.
I agree with you. In fact, that's called the moralistic fallacy, that because I might be disadvantaged in some way, it's wrong, and therefore it isn't so. That's really a fallacy that says that if it's wrong, it isn't so. And that doesn't follow.
Well, look, you're a psychologist, and I have sympathy for educated people in this field, but I want to ask you, you said Freud had it backwards. Tell me how he had it backwards.
Well, he had it half right in that sex, really, not sex evolved to get our genes into the next generation. So in that sense, he was correct. But he said that he made these fixed rules about these stages that you have to go through, and that if you didn't properly go through these stages, then you'd be messed up in life and have a...
Oh, what, the oral, the anal, the phallic, et cetera? Yeah, that whole theory?
I think he made all that up. And but the reality is that when people get disturbed of various sorts because they put themselves down, or they put others down, or they put the world down, they get enraged, or they get grandiose, then they're so upset that they use different means to appease themselves, whether it's more regulation or hurting others or...
But what about in Freud's view that sexuality as the causation of all neurosis? Would you agree with some of that, or all of it, or none of it?
I think you got to be very careful. I mean, obviously, sex is important in the sense that it motivates a lot of what we do. Now, a lot of that is unconscious. He was correct about that, because let's say if I study painting or something, I'm not consciously thinking that this is going to get me laid. On the other hand, it might help me get that.
Well, what do you think people go to museums for?
Yeah, right. So
I'm joking. But how many people that are in museums are there to meet somebody? You have to ask yourself, you think everyone's there just to look at the paintings and the sculptings? I would think a lot of people are going there to meet sophisticated people looking at paintings and sculptings. Yeah. In addition to looking at the art, they're pretending they're only looking at the painting, but maybe through the corner of their eye and the corner of their mind, they're hoping to meet somebody like themselves. Somebody else who appreciates fine art.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I've been in radio for 16, 17 years. I have an authoritative position. I have a gifted voice. I've been gifted with a wonderful, let us say, a patriarchal voice. It's not just that my voice is deep and sonorous. It's that behind it, there's a sense of reality and truth and honesty. Although, I mean, there's a lot of people with deep voices. You hear them all the time on radio, you know, reading ads. You know, you're listening to ABC News, you know, the standard. So it's not just the voice. It's like people can hear something in my voice that lets them want to ask me a question about their life. Now, let's go back to you, the listener, who doesn't have a lifestyle question. Why would you listen to such a thing? Because it's of human interest. There's nothing more interesting nor anything, there's nothing more political than the human next to you. Every person next to you is the product of millions of years of human evolution. It's the thing that always amazes me. It's why the human being is sacred, especially to those of us in the West. And it's hard to understand the mindset of the Islamists who see the world through such twisted, distorted, throwback eyes that they don't even see the miracle of human life. All they see is how to kill it and destroy it and crush it. And kill it because it doesn't conform to their vision of an 8th century book. Okay? That's what we're facing on the planet today. And if we don't win the battle, we go into 1,000 years of darkness. That's what's at stake. The same that was at stake when a Churchill laid out the battle for Britain. That it was Christendom versus Nazism. It's the same exact battle all over again, only it's got new players. But make no mistake about it. It's either we win or they win. If they win, it's 1,000 years of darkness. And that's why you have to join the fight. You have to understand that the vigilance is what it takes. But in the midst of it, you have to lead your life. And what does that come down to? Everything we're talking about. Your job, your children, you, your aging problems, the issues of aging, whether it's a pet that's dying, what that's doing to you. You know, I had a, who did I run into last week? A guy I know. Big guy, must be 6'5", 295 pounds. I needed him for a certain security situation. I had met him months before. Wonderful, nice man, former military. This man, as big as and as strong as he is, told me that he had just put his dog to sleep after 16 years, a little dachshund. And he didn't know what to say. He was besides himself with grief. And I said, I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to get into it because I had my own situation. I said, look, you know, losing an animal is sometimes as bad as losing a human. He said to me, it's often worse. I said, I understand that from people who tell me that. And then he said he's told men the story of him losing the dog and having to take him to have him euthanized. He said the men broke into tears and they were just as big and as strong as he was. So now, what does that tell you? It tells you that beneath all of us, there's a human being inside, rather the image. You can't just live on the television images that they're putting out. They're all false images. So what we're trying to get at here is you, 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 and more you. Washington, Ashley, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello. In regards to what you were saying earlier in your show about you don't know if you're gaining or losing an audience, I'd say
right.
that you're definitely gaining a huge audience of young people even. I mean, I discovered your show. A lot of people around my age listen to your show, and I'm sure there are lots of young people.
But what do you hear in this show that you find worth spending your time that you have? You have the texting and the Twitter. Why are you listening to Savage today?
You know what you're talking about, and you say it, you know, in
clearly.
A pretty bold statement. In a
okay,
that,
and that's so lacking in our society. Yeah. In other words, the politician is always going to give you an answer that has no answer in it.
Exactly.
You're going to get an answer that is a worthless answer. Whatever you ask him, you're going to get a slippery fish. Did you ever go fishing as a young girl, Ashley?
I have. My dad.
Do you remember when you would see a fish in a shallow water? When you were a little kid, you would reach for the fish, and due to refraction, light refraction, the fish was not where you thought it was. It was like 3-6 inches away from that because of the refraction of light through the water.
I do remember that, yes.
That's the way you feel society is, I'll bet, right?
Of course.
Now, whatever you reach for, it's not there because it's not what you thought it was. That's number one. And no one's telling you what the refracted image actually looks like. And I try to give people the refracted image of what it really is, as opposed to the fish being over here when it's over there. And I think that's why you're listening, Ashley. So what's your question today?
I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to give you that statement.
That's beautiful. Well, you know what? I have a question for you.
What's that?
You want my question for you? What year in school? What year are you in school?
I'm currently not in, in college right now, but
that's so it's not, I don't say it with a shame. It's like people used to say, I have cancer. I mean, you don't have to be ashamed to not be in college. Obviously it's a choice you made. So what are you doing right now?
I am working two jobs and I have an apartment. I'll probably go to school when
you're ready for it, when you're good and ready for it. Okay. Well, you know what? Let me send you a copy of my book as a gift, because you're such a hardworking, serious person. Maybe it'll give you some comfort and some intelligence on what's going on in this country under Obama. Stay in the line.
Savage.
We are going to tell you a little tale of truth about my weekend where I went to a classic car show, number one, and why men go to classic car shows, and why some women go to classic car shows. It's mainly a guy thing. Incredible fun. And then I went on the Franklin Delano Roosevelt's floating White House, Potomac. I can never say Potomac correctly. It's something to do with Washington, D.C. It's actually Potomac. You've got to think of the word tome. And I learned that it was formerly a World War II-era frigate. It was actually based on a World War I design. It was a warship. And in those days, the level of luxury was so little, you know, like minimal. Compared to today, it's so Romanesque. I mean, I own a yacht, right? A small, you know, 59-foot boat. This is 161 foot or 180 feet. I don't know how long it is. I have the
the card on the vote, but amazing to me. She's 75 years old, and it's a former warship converted to carry President Roosevelt around up and down, mainly the Potomac. But I understand he also took it up to Maine. It's a coastal cruiser. Incredible fun. And I enjoyed being in the wheelhouse with the captain, who's a former submariner. Great guys, just terrific guys. And the other crew members of the Potomac.
Savage.
I always thought that I'd be dead by now. I mean, I don't know how to put this. This is such a hard thing to say. I never thought it'd come out of me. But I never thought I'd live this long. Because I come from a short-lived father and a grandfather. So I always had, like, this tick-tock over my head, like, heart disease, the heart attack, blah. But then I spent years, like, looking for the reason. It's not like I think I found it, but I did change my lifestyle. Like, I didn't smoke two packs of Philip Morris every day unfiltered. I didn't eat flunk, and I need, like, you know, fat meat and potatoes, although I'm eating more fat meat and potatoes now because the seafood that I was living on for years is all contaminated by and large. It's a hard thing to admit. I've been taking mega vitamins for 35 years. I mean, I've written many books on it. Many of you know my books going back to the 70s, right? So I'm here now. God knows I'll be here tomorrow, right? But let's say I live another, my mother lived to 88, father to 55. I don't know. Let's say I live to 10 more years. Functional, good functional years. I'm coming up with a number. I don't know how long it'll be. 10 more minutes for all I know. But let's say 10 years. I can't just do radio. So I'm saying, what am I going to do with myself, let's say, during the day when I'm preparing the show? And I don't need 10 hours a day to prepare anymore. I write best-selling books, but I still have too much energy. People say, where do you get it from? How do you do it at your age? What my age? I've been this way since I'm 5 years old. And I realized, I told you where I get the magic power from. I told you it's from my deceased brother, Jerome, my silent brother, Jerome. He never talked. He never walked. He was allegedly blind. I told you he was sent away, you know, at a home at five. It killed me. It ripped a piece of my guts out. And he died after 20 years in a home in a horrible, oh, God, in like a public, I think, Wiltwyck on Staten Island. Don't ask. My mother, poor mother, she's in heaven. What she had to go through every week to go visit him. She'd come back drained and couldn't talk for 2 days. So the influence of my silent brother on me, I think, is what motivates me to a great extent. Because I dreamed of him. I was going through a very bad, like, down, like, night or day. Do you ever have one of those? I have them all the time, up and down, up and down. It's the way I am. It's human beings are like that. The doctors would have you believe you're sick and need a medication in order to drug the human condition. No, thank you very much. I'd rather struggle with life rather than let you turn me into another a Democrat, you know, who gets up there with the Sieg Heil crowd and thinks if only there was a Obamacare for everybody, the world would be perfect. And I dreamed of my brother out of nowhere. He came to me and talked to me from the next world. Well, that unto itself is suspect, is it not? Anyway, what I'm getting at is, so what do I do with the rest of my life, with the spare time? I'm not going to open a restaurant. I have friends in the restaurant business. It's a grueling, horrendous, difficult life. You ask anyone who owns even a successful restaurant, I'm not talking about a greasy spoon. I mean really good places, and I see how hard it is. First of all, everyone will rob you blind if you blink an eye. That's A. Unless you're in there 20 hours a day. I don't care if it's credit card. I don't care what. They're going to walk out with a bottle of wine, a bottle of scotch, or money. That's all. That's number one. So you got to be there. And then you have to be there to watch the food. You got to make. You realize a restaurant is only one meal away from a disaster? I thought about that. We in talk radio live on a tightrope. We're only one sentence or one word away from a total meltdown. But in a restaurant, you're only one meal away from it, too. You can serve a contaminated. What if you serve a contaminated Portuguese cucumber? Bing, you're out of business. Right? The next thing you know, all of the lawyer, all the relatives of Soros who weren't as smart, who became lawyers or dentists, they're in the restaurant. The dentist eats, gets sick, and then he goes to his brother, who's the lawyer, and sues you. You're out. So, terrible business. So rule that out. Bar? No, I don't want to be a bartender. And a cafe? What, are you kidding me? I don't know why people go in these businesses, so that's not for me. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Cars? I love cars. I love boats. But I don't want to sell them necessarily. I couldn't. What if I sold private jets for fun? I know a lot about them. I love them. I mean, even on the ground, I like private jets. I could probably be a good private jet salesman. But I don't know if I can go from talk radio into private yacht sales and jet sales. That might be fun.
But I don't travel. That's the problem. I'd have to sell them out of my living room. So the only way, because I don't like to go anywhere. I like to basically do my radio show from my houses, too. So, in other words, if I wanted to sell a, let's say I wanted to sell the new G, I think it's the G550. I don't even know the latest one. I think they're coming up with a G600 now. I don't even know. It's competing with this one, that one, or that, or Global Express. I'd have to sell it by the model in my living room. But I'll bet you I could sell them in model and then send you down to the airport to look at the real one. Same with ships. I could sell ships. I've always been interested in not in yachts, but in ships. I have a nice-sized 40-ton yacht that I drive myself with a bow and stern thruster. I've learned that. I can run this boat myself. Captain Mike and the dog, it's all we need. There's just something about the bay with the boat with no one on it. I mean, if I talk for a living, right, I don't really want anyone on the boat. Then I have to listen to them. I go insane listening to anybody on a boat. What am I on a boat for, listening to someone? You can go crazy when they're coming in your right ear and you're trying to dodge people on parasails and kayakers and schmucks cutting off boats. You got to focus on the water. So I get kids listening. Yak. People think they go on a boat. They get verbal diarrhea. All they want to do, yak. What are they going on a boat for? They could stay home on a telephone, you know, on like a party line, like, hello, Mrs. Goldberg. So I go out alone with the dog. You know why? Because I like to look at the baby seals every year they come up. I know the coves they come up in. I probably know the bay as well as anyone in the whole world, by the way. I don't think there's a cove in the San Francisco Bay I haven't been in. I'd say from the Bay Bridge forward all the way, I know the Bay Area very well. I've been boating in it for so long. There's people who must know it better than I. I'll admit that, but I know it very well. You know that my new novel's called Abuse of Power. It's a novel, and it's a thriller. It's an amazing book because a lot of it is set in San Francisco Bay. The guy is a journalist who loses his national career because he's smeared by a group that is somewhat like a group you might know of. They smear him by taking his words out of context, and he winds up working for a local station only. But a lot of the book is set on San Francisco Bay and some islands that you may not have heard of. You're not going to believe this movie when it comes out. I know this movie's going to be turned. And book's going to be a movie. I'm so excited by it. So she said, Mike, why don't you stick to what you do? Do talk radio because it's all you're good at and you're great at it. Or keep writing those books, Mike. Don't diminish yourself by, you know, doing anything. So what I'm getting at is one of the things I thought of doing is becoming a life coach. Then I said, that's interesting. But then here's the problem. See, everything has a problem attached to it. I reached a point in life where everything has a negative to it. Nothing on earth is clean. Let's say I do the life coach thing, okay? So you want to do it in person because in the radio you don't meet any people, right? You're on the radio. You're in a studio, so you want people contact, right? People. It's like, let's say a big entertainer wants to do a live performance in a small club. That's well known because they need the contact with the people. Like Al Pacino would go from doing a movie to doing a live theater show in the Village. Why? He needs the crowd. He needs not the smell of the grease paint, but the smell of the enter with the perfume, I guess. I don't know, whatever it is. Whatever floats is his macaroni, okay? So I want the people contact, right? So I do the life coach things and what. Now I'm going to have them come to an office and fetch to me about what's wrong and I should tell them what to do. Okay, how do I protect myself from a yenta setting me up saying I did something inappropriate? I don't want anyone around me. All right, so you say, Mike, you're so good at it. People would like your advice. Do it on the telephone. Then I'm back where I am. I'm on the radio again. I don't want to do it disconnected from people. I don't know how anybody in the healing professions today has a practice without fear of some moron saying that he did something to her. I guess you have to have a nurse in the room with you, right? But you can't do that if you're doing coaching. How does a psychiatrist do it? How does a psychiatrist sit in the room with a woman today without fearing she's going to go out and say to somebody, in the middle of it, he touched me? I don't understand this, the world we live in. Look at the calls I'm getting telling you what to do. I should grow celery seed extract? That's what I should do with a living? All right, tell you what, you'll be my life coach. How's that? Tell Michael Savage what he should do with the rest of his life in addition to 1-800-449-8255. It has to be on a classy level. Don't make recommendations like to give me a job where I need like I talked about, okay? Don't recommend I do something that I need a name tag, a hairnet, or a funny hat, in essence, or something on that level. I'm not looking for that kind of level of living or income. I'm not doing it for the money either. Remember that. I mean, of course I'll charge for whatever I do, but I'm not doing it for that reason. in the sense that I'm not a big spender. I don't wear jewelry. I don't need anything anymore. I don't want anything. So I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for the involvement with people and doing something of use to people and getting the feedback of being of use to people. You follow what I'm saying? Sacramento, Jeremy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I was wondering, a few months ago you had mentioned that you looked on eBay and you seen that your health book was going for like $200, and you said you were going to republish it and so no one could make money off you. And I was just wondering when you were going to...
I actually did republish Healing Children Naturally. It's on my website for $20 or so. People were selling used copies for up to $200. Of that book. Now, you could buy it in a reprint edition of my own book there. People love that book. They keep buying it. It's an eternal classic. But I've written other books over the years that I'm thinking of redoing, and I don't even want to go through them. I wrote books in the 70s that were 20 years ahead of their time. You know that I wrote books reducing the risk of Alzheimer's that should have won Nobel Prizes? I wrote books in the 70s with some anti-aging concepts in them that are currently fashionable in the medical profession today, but you wouldn't think that anybody would notice, would you? I notice. All that matters is that I know. Jay and Reno, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Savage, you need to start a company being a political consultant with your...
You know, I've thought about that as well, because I'm probably as good. I would be as good at it as anybody. But I'm going to tell you something else. I've tried to advise people, because I know more about the heartbeat of America than any consultant in this country. I don't care what data they use. My microphone and my ears are the best data you could ever buy. And I know better what politicians should say, not say, and how to appeal to the people. They wouldn't listen to me. They'd go and buy some hack who worked for the opposition a week before. Many of them are kind of idiotic. I got to tell you, Jay, many of the people in politics are rather stupid. I must tell you, they're not that clever. But all right, I've thought of politics. I won't go into politics. I'll never run for...
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The American people want jobs, but they also want leadership. They want character in a president. In recent days, we have learned that four different women have accused you of inappropriate behavior. Here, we're focusing on character and on judgment. You've been a CEO.
Yes.
Why should the American people hire a president if they feel there are character issues?
The American people deserve better than someone being tried in a court of public opinion based on unfounded accusations. That's what that's about. I value my character and my integrity more than anything else. And for every one person that comes forward with a false accusation, there are thousands who would say none of that sort of activity ever came from Herman Cain.
Are you persuaded by what Mr. Cain has said? Would you keep him on if you had bought his company?
I'm... Look, Herman Cain is the person to respond to these questions. He just did. The people in this room and across the country can make their own assessment. I'm not going to...
During the time that she worked at the Educational Foundation, she had met Mr. Cain. On at least three occasions, during the NRA convention, Mr. Cain was seated next to her during dinners, and a lunch.
You're listening to the voice of glorified Olmeds.
She had spent a substantial amount of time speaking with him there at the NRA.
Glorified Olmeds is now speaking with a smear campaign against poor Herman Cain.
At the suggestion
of the voice of glorified Olmeds,
whom
the most hated attorney in the United States of America,
reached out to Mr. Cain for help in finding another job.
Why was she fired, Glorified?
Help that she had hoped
wait, stop. Glorified, why was she fired to begin with, Glorified? Keep going. I'll ask her questions.
Stimulus package.
Glorified Olmeds, you are the reason America hates attorneys. You are the reason America is wrecked, in my opinion. But here we go again. I have watched a lot of things in my life. I've never seen anything like what they're doing to Herman Cain. So I have a question for you today in the Savage Nation. They wheel out a human bialy stucker. Now, a bialy, for those of you who don't know, is a soft piece of dough. It's strange to me how life imitates art. But here's this woman no one ever heard of and no one will ever remember, Sharon Bialik. And a bialy, for those of you who don't know, is a soft piece of dough, sort of the opposite of a bagel, which is a hard piece of dough. They take out this human bialy stuck, and she says that Herman Cain did this, Herman Cain did that 12 years ago. So I have a question for you, the audience of the Savage Nation. Is it possible that the human bialy came on to Herman Cain and he rejected her because he's a decent man? Is it possible that Herman Cain is the only man to have turned down oral sex from the human bialy? And is this why she still remembers his rejection? Remember, you got to remember this. Hell hath no fury like a homely woman scorned. Now, it could be that he is the only man in her entire life who turned down oral sex. And for this reason, she's waited 12 years to get even. I'm serious about it. Why should you believe her? Now, this is an interesting story in what I'm about to tell you. A Google search today by my producer for the name Sharon Bialik, that's the accuser, and it was done in the Google search, Sharon Bialik. It came back with the results, Sharon Bialik, the Cain accuser, and David Axelrod, who was Obama's brain. And a link to the website, freerepublic.com, was then broken. The result that came up said this thread has been pulled on 11-7-2011 at 1:09 p.m. by administrating moderator, reason misleading. Apparently, Sharon Bialik has lived and worked in Chicago for years. Do you believe it's possible that David Axelrod somehow unleashed this woman on the American public to attack Cain? And that leads us to this question. Why does Obama fear? What does he fear about Cain? I mean, I can pretty much tell you what Obama would fear about Herman Cain. Obama is everything that Herman Cain isn't. Obama is a pretender while Herman Cain is the real McCoy. Herman Cain is a really successful man who did it on his own, while Obama is the product of numerous things, the most important thing being a creation of the left-wing fanatics who want to take over and destroy America, in my opinion. Now, why would the media be obsessed with Herman Cain and get away with this is the thing? Why did they give Jesse Jackson a pass on his sexcapades when he was running for the presidency? Do you remember that? Why did they give Al Sharpton a pass with regard to Detective Pagonis and the Freddy's Fashion Mart fire? Why? Because the media is what the media is. I have never seen anything like this. In my entire life, I have never seen anything as low as today's press conference. I don't know how we can live as a nation if we live in a nation filled with such people. I can tell you this, glorified Olmeds is the reason, in my opinion, the legal profession is hated. Not solely Gloria Olmeds, but she typifies the worst amongst the legal profession. And I have to ask you, is there a profession you despise more than the legal profession, aside from TV commentators like Wolf Blitzer? What is your worst lawyer horror story? Have you seen anything lower than the TV presenters who are covering the Cain accuser case? Do you believe that the accuser may have come on to Herman Cain and he rejected her? Is it possible that Herman Cain rejected her and that she never forgot it? Who do you believe more, her or him? Why has the media refused to pursue accusations against Jesse Jackson with the same vigor as those against Herman Cain? Why is the media ignoring all of the charges against Obama, for example, is a bigger story? Let's say you think it's solved. Many people don't think it's solved. How about the issue of Obama and his birth certificate? You say, well, that's been resolved. It hasn't been resolved. to the satisfaction of many people. Why has the media ignored that issue while they're pursuing the false allegations of sexual issues with regard to Herman Cain? See, what bothers me most about this is not that they found some human bialy, a walking piece of dough without a soul, to come up and say, he did this, he did that, he came on to me and I was shocked and I never forgot a trophy. You believe that, Chaza? You believe a Chaza like that? That's the first time in a life a man ever asked for a thing like that? I mean, let's clear the air and talk like people. Can you believe a Chaza like that? That's the first time a man ever asked her for that, if that's true. What, she never, no one ever said it to her before or after? Her heart was broken by it. Her life was ruined. Are you kidding me? And the media takes this Chaza seriously? It's unbelievable to me. How can anyone hold a press conference in the Friars Club when glorified all meds comes out? How is it possible that we're living in a country that's debased like this? So I've seen a lot in my media career. I've never seen anything on this level, never. To see a left-wing lawyer like Gloria Allmedes from L.A. find a new liar to accuse Cain is amazing to me. For the accuser to claim he made a pass at her when she was trying to get a job after she had been fired from the National Restaurant Association. Now, why did they fire her? Did anyone ask the geniuses in the media why they fired her? Why would they fire the Chaza? What was she fired for in the 90s? What is the real motivation for her coming out right now? It's to destroy Herman Cain. Who is it who dug her up? So that leads me to you. How about Obama's past associations? How about Obama's social security number from one of the New England states? How come they haven't doggedly pursued her? How about the Lord of the Fries? How come they haven't pursued Michelle Obama, the Lord of the Fries, and her associations of the past? How about her raise at the university, where she went from a hospital administrator making X, and suddenly she made about five times more money? How come there's been no pursuit of that? The Lord of the Fries should be pursued. Or how about Obama running off to Bali again this week? Why is that not a story? How about some of the other scandals that are circulating around Obama that they never talk about? How is that? How is it possible? How is this possible? 1-800-449-8255. Now, what's interesting to me is that Gloria Allmedes, glorified Allmedes, came out and said that the human bialy, the soulless piece of dough that came out today, is a lifetime Republican. Why would she say that? Why would we have to hear that? If that is true, it means the hits are coming from the Republican National Committee, because they fear Cain as much as Obama does. Remember, Obama could never win in a debate with Cain for two reasons. One, Cain has nothing to hide, while Obama has everything to hide. Two, while Cain is a slow-speaking man, he actually makes sense to the average American about making government smaller, about making China pay more. You know, let's go down the list at another time. While Obama is selling the country out as a faster rate as he possibly can, why is he going to Bali again at a time like this? Bob in Pittsburgh, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's your take on this?
Hey, it infuriates me that they're trying to take down Cain like this. I mean, after all the years of not going after Obama, where's Obama's old girlfriends? And what about some of those charges? And you know what they are about Obama when he was a youth and some of the things that, you know, he's alleged to have done in his, you know, sexual history. I mean,
correct. That is correct. That came up for a while and then it was quickly buried. Nobody ever pursued it. Why?
Throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks on Herman Cain. It really infuriates. I hate the media. I can't stand the media. I mean, I hope they get cancer and die. That's how mad I am when I see this kind of stuff going on.
Right. You don't have to like Cain as a candidate to support Cain the human being for being ripped apart like this by the vermin. These are the lowest people on the planet, what we're seeing now. We are seeing the equivalent of something out of the Stalinist Russian years. I've never seen anything like it. And I got to say again, I personalize this because I have been the victim of a smear campaign by Media Matters and the other vermin who, if I had the power, I'd put them in prison and take their assets for what they've done to me and other people. But I don't have any power. All I have is my own audience and my own truth. And the fact is I'm not going to sit by and let them do this to Cain without fighting for him. I don't care whether he comes on the show or not. I have never seen a nation wallowing in pig you-know-what like they're doing with Cain. And to see these fraudulent white liberals, one after the other, like Wolf Blitzer, who allegedly is a human being, and the others who are allegedly human beings, do this to a man and get away with it with impunity is amazing to me. Nobody calls them on the carpet. So I have outrage at this. You understand? I have outrage. It's sickening. What about Obama's scandals? What about Obama's birth certificate? Why do we never hear any of that? What about
all of the others on the left who are given a pass by the vermin in the media.
Savage.
Prime Minister just came from Brussels, where he was part of the negotiations around the Eurozone crisis. I'm glad to see that progress was made in the recent meetings. I think it is an important first step. We've seen that, although it's very complicated, obviously the countries of the Eurozone and all of Europe are committed to the European project and are intent on making sure that it continues. We've seen that the message that they are going to deal with this in a serious way has calmed markets all around the world. It will help lay the predicate for long-term economic growth, not only in Europe, but around the world. The key now is to make sure that it is implemented fully and decisively, and I have great confidence in the European leadership to make that happen.
I turn on the TV and I see some wacko psychologists saying that the Frenchmen and Schwarzenegger and the others are suffering a disease now. Hypersexual sex disorder, and it's in the DSM. They want to enter it into the manual. So that leads us now to my question to the audience of how have you channeled this incredible sexual energy that you are blessed with? You see, you can look upon a sexual obsession as a disease, which is what the media and the medical establishment is trying to do in order to victimize you and put you on a medication. Or you can look upon it as an opportunity that you were granted an incredible life force. And you can take this life force and you can use it for good or for evil. And there are phrases for it in every religion. What do you think religion is about but channeling these urges? You want to analyze religion from a Freudian point of view, you can do that as well. And it's a healthy way to sublimate your sexuality. In the 60s, they would laugh at people who were religious. Don't you remember? They would call them anal and you know, you're uptight, let it all hang out, why not do it in the road? And how'd that work out for them? How'd that work out for them? Real well, I suppose. And I compare that to the, quote, uptight guy who channeled those urges. You see, this is something you don't understand. Most people don't understand that that very religious Christian or that very religious Jew or that very religious Muslim that you may meet who is controlling his sexual urges has the same drives you do. You think that behind that holy veneer, they're not driven by the same things. You're mistaken. They're human just like you are. The thing is that they're superior to you in that they're controlling it and they're sublimating it in a wholesome manner, in a beautiful manner that is made for the development of a family. That's the whole point of religion. If you were to ask me what religion is really good for, it's to make certain that there's a mother and a father around and a stable home for children, if nothing else, okay?
Savage.
Talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Talk Radio Network and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when? 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you, people get to understand that you're a real person, and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, the average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe. And by the way, listeners to talk radio vote both with their wallets and their ballots.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Tuition is going up because state budgets are also feeling the crunch. But I also heard what Senator Alexander was saying, talking about costs like health care. I hope that means that he's now becoming a fan of the health care reform bill that we passed, because we know that that's starting to bring health care costs down. In the course of this past year, we've got 1 million young people who now have access to health care that didn't have it before because of the Affordable Care Act. We're bringing health care costs down.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com.
Savage.
In Holland, though, they're waking up, while here in America we're going in the wrong direction. They're cracking down on pot clubs. We're opening up more pot clubs. They're cracking down on free prostitution. We're trying to liberalize prostitution, which leads us to a question, not about the two Michelles, but about prostitution. I've always wanted to talk about that with you and ask you if you think prostitution should be legalized in the United States of America. Now, I know this is it's a pretty difficult question for many people who think that the immediate answer should be no, it should remain illegal. But it is called the oldest profession for a reason. It certainly has been around before politicians stole the mantle from the prostitutes. But the fact of the matter is, look at how many politicians' lives have been ruined by using, prostitutes, okay? So the question is, do prostitutes save marriages or destroy marriages? Do prostitutes spread disease or actually contain disease? Is prostitution something to be reviled, revered, or simply decriminalized? You see, I didn't say legalize it as much as I would say should it be decriminalized. There's a big difference between decriminalizing something and legalizing something. There's a big difference between condoning something such as prostitution and decriminalizing it. And there are arguments to be had on both sides of the issue. I think we should have that discussion. So if you care to chime in on this topic of the decriminalization of prostitution, or, you know, however way you want to look at it. You know, we can broaden it into drugs. People last week were arguing that the war on drugs is lost and that all drugs should be legalized, which, of course, is a crazy idea. As you well know, marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. The medical evidence is quite overwhelming that the toxins found in marijuana smoke are very carcinogenic. So if you'd like to talk about the war on drugs and or the war on prostitutes, go ahead. 1-800-449-8255. Or if you would rather not talk about the world's oldest profession, but the second oldest profession, which is politics, we can do that as well right here on the Savage Nation. Now let's take calls on the prostitution issue. And you're going to see something interesting here. You're going to see the male viewpoint, and then you're going to see the female viewpoint. And I'll bet you that you're going to see a dividing line pretty much along the divided along the sexes. So let's begin with a female, Joe, in New York City on WOR. What do you think about prostitution? Should it be decriminalized or should it be continue to be illegal?
Well, I lived in Reno, Nevada, and you know it's legal there in the outskirts of the town. I didn't like it because I think that it encouraged men, because it was illegal, to think that it was okay and to cheat on their wives. And
you mean it would be, it encouraged them to, because it was legal, not illegal. It was legal in Nevada.
Right.
Right. And of course the description of where it occurred, outskirts, is very apt in a certain way, but we'll play with those words another time. So you think it destroyed marriages or supported marriage?
Well, I think if the wives found out about it, it was extremely hurtful. And I know that some marriages were destroyed.
All right. Now, this is absolutely a truth, what you just said. However, not to play devil's advocate, but to play rational advocate here, isn't it also true that when there is no sex between parties, if a man indulges in such a thing and stays in the marriage, it's actually helpful towards marriage?
I think if the woman doesn't know about it, probably. But, you know, a lot of this no sex in marriage has to do with both parties. And if the man is, you know, partially responsible due to his behavior, then he thinks that, you know, since there's no sex, it's okay to go outside the marriage. And he takes, he doesn't take as much responsibility for, you know, the behavior in marriage.
No, I hear you. So it's a reversal of the 60s. It, you're saying if it don't feel good, don't do it.
Well, if it hurts.
Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Let's take the other side of the coin. Tom in New York on WOR. Are you for or against prostitution being decriminalized?
Well, I think it should be decriminalized because it's a business, and as long as the girls are seeing a doctor, you know. One other thing, this woman, she hits her husband in bed, and he says, "What's that for?" And she says, "That's for being a lousy lover." So he hits her back, and she says, "What's that for?" And he says, "That's for knowing the difference, you know."
Oh, that's bad. That reminds me of something that occurred when I was a local talk show host, 14, 15 years ago. I don't know how it came up, but we were talking point of view, you know. So one wise guy called me from New York, and he said, it was from San Francisco. I was on in San Francisco, and he said, "Hey, Mike," he said, "I don't know what you're talking about, premature ejaculation." He said, "It takes me 30 seconds. I give him a chance."
There you go. Take care.
I told that joke last night to a couple of friends in a restaurant in San Francisco. They got a kick out of it. It's very funny. It's a male joke. You know, women don't like it. It's very degrading. Should prostitution be decriminalized or legalized? But I want to read you a 5-minute introduction to the debate on prostitution. One, is it a victimless crime? Is it a victimless crime? There's two sides to that. Some say it is a victimless crime, and some say it is not a victimless crime. How about free choice? There are a lot of people who prefer to be prostitutes. Should they have the right to have freedom to choose to be a prostitute because of, let's say they have psychological issues. Or let's say it gives them a sense of controlling men, and they do it for that. Or let's say they're what in the old days would have been called a nymphomaniac, and that they could never be in any relationship other than as a prostitute with many different men. Shouldn't that be a free choice issue? What about morality? Pro would say prostitution as an institution is evil. It doesn't matter if it is the world's oldest profession, it's still wrong. What about the other side, which says, why is it illegal to charge for what can be freely dispensed? Sex work is no more moral or immoral than the chocolate or distilling industries. That's the head of a group of prostitutes called Coyote. How about human trafficking? And does this encourage human trafficking? I mean, would legalizing prostitution or decriminalizing it encourage or discourage human trafficking? It's an interesting question. How about women and violence? Would decriminalization better protect people in the sex industry from violence and abuse? Or would it increase it? Some would say it's a cruel lie to suggest that decriminalization or legalization will protect anyone in prostitution, because it is not possible to protect someone whose source of income exposes them to the likelihood of being raped on an average of once a week. In other words, even if it's legal, you're still going to get men who are going to hurt them or kill them. Okay, so that's a reality of it. There are a lot of sick men out there. You understand that? How about HIV/AIDS prevention or any other disease? That's a big one. There are many people listening to this show who have no real moral qualms about prostitution one way or the other, but they're terrified of the disease issue, as they should be. And those on the side against it, the con side, would say that even if you test a prostitute every week for HIV, she'll test negative for at least the first 4 to 6 weeks and possibly the first 12 weeks after being infected. So that means that while the test is becoming positive and the results are becoming known, the prostitute may expose up to 630 people to HIV. And this is under the best of circumstances, with testing every week and a 4-week window period. It also assumes that the prostitute will quit working as soon as he or she finds out the test is HIV positive, which is, by the way, very unlikely. So in order to slow the global spread of HIV/AIDS, we should focus our efforts on abolishing prostitution. That's according to a gentleman named Jeffrey Barrows, health consultant on human trafficking for the Christian Medical Association. On the other side, on the prostitute legal side, they say the other thing. And I can't even read it because it doesn't make any sense, truthfully, to the other side. How about the prevalence of rape? Those who want it legalized say that It's estimated that if prostitution were legalized in the U.S., the rape rate would decrease by 25%, which I don't know how they come to that. I have no idea how they can come to that. I don't understand that one.
Savage.
Minnesota, Margaret, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm calling in response to your question about rechanneling the energy, good or bad. I feel most alive when I have a paintbrush in my hand. I've been painting Lake Superior because of the tumultuous nature of the lake itself, and I find a lot of solace in applying my energy towards something that could be long-lasting, could be an heirloom someday. If not, whatever. It's more about the process. I made 30 paintings.
Okay, but no, this is very important. But did you originally pick up a paintbrush because you are wrestling with this issue?
No, it's my nature. I wrote poetry as a child and doodled around. And when I was a young adult, I went skydiving and I wanted extreme adrenaline, and then I'm a grandma. So I've painted more recently as I've slowed down, as I mature, but I've been prone to painting, but I've more so in the last 5 years.
I understand. See, I myself have, you want to hear something funny? You look back on your life, you say, what did you want to do that you didn't do? The many times in my life I've tried to paint and I can't. There are things I've tried to do that I just can't do well, so I don't do them. I know that I don't have talent in that area. I could make horrendous paintings. I mean, I've gotten the brushes out, and there were times, but they're no good. I don't want to do anything that's not good. So that's interesting. So others would say, well, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, do it anyway. Well, take a look at the Brooklyn Museum. You'll see how that works out. Take a look at what's going on in the art departments and universities today, where they've encouraged kids who really have no talent whatsoever to believe that because they smear paint on a canvas that it's an art. Or take a look at what the Obamas just with their poetry at the White House. It was not poetry. Nothing is gibberish, but they think because they tell someone they just write what enters their mind that it's art. It's not art. It's dreck in plain English. Pauline in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I wish I had the hypersexuality problem. Basically, I would direct it right towards my husband.
You direct it towards your husband?
Yes.
But you're saying you don't have any other impulses, though, other than he?
No. We had a good relationship, and then menopause hit, and it destroyed me.
And
so
what about him? Did
problem,
he did? But no, that's an interesting. It's nothing to joke about. I mean, you could turn it into a joke and ha-ha, but the man has the outlet through sexual enhancement drugs like Viagra. Is that what happened?
No, he's okay. I'm the one with the problem, and we never had a problem until menopause hit me. And just for the pharmaceutical companies, they're always going after the guys like, okay, here's the blue pill. There's like a lot of gals out here that are waiting for the pink pill.
But maybe you don't need it. Did you ever think that this is nature's way of giving you a rest finally from that frenzy? Isn't that a beautiful thing to feel? Not to
no,
be driven like that?
I don't want that. I want to be back with my husband the way I used to.
I see. Okay, well, that's another story. A lot of people would say, thank God they don't feel it anymore. Doesn't mean that they stopped living. Yet I know people very old who have never lost the urge. So what are you going to do about it? Jeremy, you've been holding on WTNT in Washington. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your story.
Yeah, just in response to channeling sexual energy, Savage, I'm 25 years old, and I take a lot of that energy, and I weightlift, I bodybuild. I'm not professional, I'm quite amateur, but, doing that.
Now this is very important, and again, not a joke, not meant to be a joke. Are you consciously sublimating sexual energy into the bodybuilding?
Not all the time, but yeah, sometimes I'm...
In other words, let's say you're going crazy, you're dying to be with a woman and you don't have a girl, whatever. What, do you run to the gym?
No. When I can, I go. I'm married. My wife and I have a 3-year-old daughter, so we can't always just jump in the bed, you know, whenever.
Oh, yeah, well, once you have a child, everything changes. You know, stepping on a plastic rattle in the middle of heat is a... You know, that tends to change things. You got to take a lot of cold showers after the child's born. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like stepping on a plastic rattle to destroy the mood. Isn't that true?
I'd still go. It wouldn't destroy it for me.
How about stepping on a wet diaper? Would that kill your odger?
If there was something on my foot, I'd probably just wipe it off.
Okay, let's stop right there. Come on. We're just getting... It's funny, though. It really is. I mean, the old jokes, that nothing will stop a man. I mean, look at this guy, this Frenchman. Apparently, if he did what she says, he chased her down the hall. I mean, do you really believe a guy would do that to a maid? He sounds crazy. Do you actually believe he would chase her, throw her down, and force her like that? I find it implausible, incidentally. I think the whole thing was maybe something started and then she turned it into something else for a lawsuit. I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving her allegations. He's ruined anyway. His professional life is over, but I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving what she says happened. Charlie in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, let's simplify this. All self-empowerment aside, all elitist stuff aside, marriage is biblically based. Sex is biblically based. It's made for joy and marital unity in Jesus Christ. It's no rocket science. And most importantly, to see God glorified through this union, not out of any kind of self-righteousness, just enjoying free sex with your wife, with your spouse forever. You know, it's a covenant. It's not contractual. And that's where sex should be channeled. Amen.
All right, you got it right. You got it right. You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. If there were more people like you, the country would be healthier. New York City, WOR Dave, go ahead, please. Your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. You know, now that you mention it, as far as the TV people making love to the camera, now I figured out why I find TV distracting. Before that, I was wondering why.
That's a good separate joke. But no, I remember when I briefly had a three-month television career, the director always said, look into the lens and make believe you're talking to someone you want to, whatever, you're making love to the camera. I never understood that. I could not consciously understand how you make love to a camera.
I find that my energy isn't directed towards a wife and three kids. Once you do that, it's pretty well set.
Amen. There you go. Another healthy man. There's two now out of the whole nation. We heard two healthy men go the show. So I got to tell you a story that has nothing to do with sex and no sublimation at all. A guy I knew came on my boat and he made a mistake. He tied the docking line in a high wind against the rail instead of through one of the apertures that are made for the line. And then when we docked, he said, I think I damaged your boat. And unfortunately, it tore the stainless steel rail right out of the teak rail, okay? And it really broke my heart because I keep my boat like a model ship. I was really angry and pissed off, so I find the welding shop. The guy turns out to be a fan I didn't know, and he does the job for me in a half an hour. Can you imagine? Werner's Welding. Great guy. Straightens the rail out. Tom List of List Marine and Sausalito comes down because I told him there were like 14 screws, like seven of them were broken off and sticking out of the wood. I don't know if you know anything about woodworking. It's murderously hard to get broken screws out of wood. He did it. He had all the special tools to do it. He fixed that rail and put it back in within less than an hour, but he had a box of tools, and, you know, I watched a man who works on wood and restores wooden ships and has always owned wooden boats, and he's a member of a wooden boat society in Sausalito of old shipwrights who build wooden ships and restore wooden ships. It's an amazing thing to see craftsmen at work in a world that is so computer-driven, you know? I mean, I grew up using tools, but when I meet a man who uses tools for a living and knows how to use tools, I respect them. I know people, by the way, I respect who don't know how to drive a nail. They couldn't cut a piece of wood correctly. But I think there's something lost in a society when kids grow up and they don't know how to use tools. Now, here I am. You could call me...
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Admittedly, we have the most incompetent, corrupt administration in history. Yes. But I believe that the Founding Fathers were so brilliant that they anticipated a day that an imposter like this would wind up in the White House. The entire Constitution was written to protect the people from Obama. My belief is that the entire Constitution was written foreseeing the day that an imposter communist would take over the country, the White House, and try to impose his will on the people with every trick in the book. But to couple with that, you have a complacent, a supine media like I've never seen. I watched Obama's press conference. I had to stop eating. I have never seen anything like it. One loaded laugh, one loaded question after another. And the last question was, say, for some stooge from NPR who basically gets up and says, Mr. Obama, do you have any hope that the Republicans will be nice? Listen to clip 15.
Can you share with us why you have some hope that the talks that have been going on might actually produce an outcome?
I always have hope. Don't you remember my campaign?
You hear? You hear the schmucks? These are our press. This is the press, national press, sitting there. He makes a stupid, tepid joke, and right away they're in laughter like the principal came into a classroom. I never saw anything like this. Where is the press? When did this happen? Where did the hardened reporters go? When did they disappear? When were they replaced by these sad sacks laughing at a president's tepid jokes when they should be the ones pressing him on saying, wait a minute, tell us why you're pushing raising taxes and spending more when it's not worked in East, it didn't work in Eastern Europe. Why are you trying to push that model on the American economy? You'd think one person would ask that question? They were all handpicked. They were all handpicked. So that's why it's hard for me to watch television at all anymore. I admit I watch too much television, but I can't watch the news at all. I can't even watch cable television news. You forget about it. I mean, even Fox, they do a fairly good job, but I can't even watch that. It is so cut and dry. There's no real emotion in it. There's no real gutsy opinion in it. It's all cut and dried. You know what I watch a lot on TV? I got to tell you. I watch movies. I admit it. Too many at night. I admit it. The clicker now has become like a second, third hand. Sorry. Can't help it. I'm entitled. Chinese food, Italian food, occasionally Indian food, and then the clicker. What can I do? I do ride the bike and go out on the boat, and I do look at the moon at night on a full moon night, and I do watch the birds, and I do know what a peregrine falcon looks like. But the fact of the matter is far too many screens in my life. The computer all day with the call screeners. On my left side, I got a call screener that says, Tom from New York says Catholic saying. On the right side, I have the wires which show me all the websites and what's breaking. And then the dog is sleeping under the desk. And I leave here. I go home. About I don't know how much time there is between now and when I watch television. But not honest to God, it's getting it. I'm addicted to screens. And I was a guy who resisted all of these things. I'm addicted now. I'm a total addict. I am a total addict of the screen. There's nothing I can do. But, you know, you got to go with it. You know, as Aristotle and Onassis said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. I mean, the fact of the matter is I'm enjoying the Internet more than ever. I don't feel guilty about it. Do you have Internet guilt? Has anyone written that yet? Go steal my idea. Do any of you have Internet guilt that you spend too much time on the computer, not enough time with your children? Or that you're spending more time on a computer than you are with your wife? Well, that you can understand. That's an old Henny Youngman joke. Even though there were no computers then, same kind of thing. Take my wife, please. But the fact of the matter is, we're all addicted to the computer. If you have an IQ over 19, you're addicted to the computer. Let's say you meet someone who doesn't, he says he doesn't, I still meet people. I know a guy who's a lawyer, he just says, oh no, I don't have internet, I don't go on. I don't have cell phone, I don't talk to him anymore. Who could know a person like this? What is that, like a reverse snobbery? I don't have internet, I don't do email, I don't do texting, I don't have a cell phone. Tom on WTNT, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I heard your broadcast about individuals who've been falsely accused of child sexual abuse. I'm an attorney in the Washington, D.C. area, and my entire practice is dedicated to representing individuals who've been falsely accused. And I do.
Oh, my God. Well, that must be an amazing book of horrible lives that have been ruined by this. How do you defend against such witch trial cases?
There have been a number of very notable witch trial cases, like the Emerald case in up in Massachusetts.
Oh, yes, that was the worst. They went away for how many years?
Violet Amaral was only released from prison just for a very short period of time before she died of cancer. And her son, Gerald, stayed in prison, you know, a couple of years longer than that. But
and these were people who ran a school, and they were falsely accused of having a magic room that never existed, and the children were put on the stand by detectives. Isn't that true?
Yes, yes, that's true.
So what kind of cases do you typically get, Tom?
My specialty is representing people who've been accused by young children, that'd be children under the age of six, because we know from the psychological literature that children that age can be subject to suggestion. And what we see is, for example, strange spouses or girlfriends saying to their children, "Didn't daddy do something to you?" And then they're interviewed by social workers who, or detectives who have a bias, and then the poor child gets so confused and they start assimilating what they've heard, what's been suggested to them. And then,
well, Tom, how do you defend when you're not allowed to cross-examine a child? Can you put a child 5 years old on the stand?
Since the decision of the United States Supreme Court in the Crawford case, a child has to testify. If a child is complaining they've been abused, they have to testify. But before they would get on the witness stand, competent defense attorneys conduct what they call a competency taint evaluation to determine, number one, if the child is saying something that they actually remember, or if the child is saying what the child has been programmed to talk about.
But unbelievable. Well, so this is an epidemic in America, is it not?
You know that prior to this decision of the Supreme Court, children were able to be talked to in closed rooms by social workers and detectives, and then those individuals were able to repeat what the child said, and the poor defendant, the father, the boyfriend, never had an opportunity to cross-examine the child, but that's all been abolished now. So really the aggressive and competent defense attorneys who realize that children often make statements that are not supported by reality, they conduct these competency taint evaluations, and they bring in mainstream psychologists to testify about the issues of suggestibility. There was a wonderful study. I know you're busy, but let me just tell you about this study.
No, wait, Tom, let me say this. You're doing really valuable work, because I believe there's an epidemic, a sub rosa epidemic of false accusations in this country. Would you agree with my generic statement that the predominant number of individuals falsely accused are white males? Is that a fair assessment in your practice?
Yes.
And would you say that it's generally white males with some property in general?
Actually, not necessarily, because it cuts across all socioeconomic groups, but it's primarily whites. It's primarily males and primarily whites. You're exactly
so
right.
So then would it be fair to conclude that those who have little or no property are being ripped apart for reasons of vendetta, just to destroy them?
Yeah. And not only that, the people that don't have the money and the right resources to hire competent counsel to get defended, if you get convicted of a child sexual abuse, you're going to go to jail. Number two, you're going to be on the sexual registry for the rest of your life.
Oh, my God.
Savage.
I want to have some fun, so we're going to do a little nostalgia. I was a busboy in the Catskill Mountains, worked 16, 18-hour days. You made $100, $110 a week. Over 10 weeks, you made $1,000, $1,200, $1,300. In those days, that paid your tuition for the whole year if you went to a city or a state college. And that's what we did. That's all. We didn't ask for a government handout. We didn't go crying about racism. We didn't go beg anybody to go shake anyone down for a buck. You did what you had to do and you went to college. That's if you had the brains and the drive. If you didn't, you didn't have to go to college. What'd you have to go for? Go take a job. I knew a guy who didn't go to college. He was actually considered stupid and he didn't go to college. But listen to how it wound up. He was like a shame in the neighborhood. I forget his name. Marty, I think. I hope you're not listening, Marty. I'll get a lawsuit yet. He worked at a gas station. Everybody else, doctor, dentist, lawyer, this, that, accountant, if you couldn't do those things, if not a comedian, anything lower. So he couldn't go to college. He was like dumb. He worked as a gas, pumping gas in a local gas station. I liked the kid. We got along great. He was a nice guy. He always had greasy fingers and, you know, he'd get under the car with the jack and the lift. We got along. I leave town after college. I go away. I work for my degrees. About 5-8 years after I leave New York, and I think I'm in this, I'm saving the world with my research and this and that, I inquire about Marty. Marty went to Florida before the real estate boom, started investing in property, became like a zillionaire, and had like 8 Rolls Royces. So, I mean, if you how do you add these things up? I mean, that's what you want. He did it. So who was smart? Well, Marty was smart. He knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to make money. That's all. I was stupid, actually. I thought I could save the world. Look how I wound up. Best-selling books, famous broadcaster, and banned in England. So you have to add it up, I mean, whichever way you want to do it. I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong. So that brings us back to the Catskill Mountains and death plots. When I say death plots, I did that specifically to get the government agents listening more carefully. I realize that they're listening to me on a regular basis while watching pornography on their computers at government expense. So when I say death plots, I figure now they'll start to listen to me. I don't mean what you're thinking. I'm talking about Europeans who came over here in my father's generation had burial plots when they got here. The day they got here, they knew they were going to be buried. And most people that I know, and we're talking about people already who are mature already. Let's put it to you this way. If you were to put a dividing line through your life, most of them are way past the midline. Okay, let's put it to you that way. They don't know how, whether it's months, weeks, years. Let's say it's not minutes. But it's already way past the midline, and they still don't know whether they're going to be buried or cremated, above ground, below ground. They have no idea what to do with the remains. They don't know who should come into the house and go through the belongings. Nobody in my generation wants to make that decision. In many ways, my father's generation was far more, they were far more courageous. They knew already. They accepted their mortality, maybe because they were Europeans. You just say burial, people turn the show right off. They wanted to, Justin Bieber, Cyrus Miley, Myra Siley, Bel Air, houses, cars, skirts, drugs, alcohol, anything but facing the fact that they're mortal. Because they all think that most Americans today live in such a dreamland. They were raised in such a dreamland. They don't have their roots in the old world. They're not the children of immigrants as I am, nor are they immigrants themselves. So they were raised in a fantasy world with everything handed to them. Irrespective of whether they were wealthy, they were spoiled. They were put on drugs very young in life, and then they took recreational drugs, and they're terrified of reality. So consequently, they don't even want to think about the fact that they're mortal, and they think that they've broken free of the zoological order. Most people in America today who are born here believe that they are in some way separate from the zoological order. They think they broke free of the zoological order and they're not made of the same stuff as a chicken. Okay? I mean, I say chicken because it could have been any animal. I didn't want to say pig because I didn't want to offend people of a certain religious orientation, so I said chicken. A chicken is not banned by any country on earth. It's a strange thing. Look how the pig is banned by Orthodox Jews, then the Muslims copied that. They don't eat it either, but look how the Chinese love it. Go figure that one out. I mean, if 1 billion people like pork, how bad could it be? See, this is the one good thing you got to understand why Islam will never take over the world. It's all to do with the Chinese love for pork. See, you got to understand this. They wouldn't fight for the survival of their country, but they'd fight for their right to eat fried pork, roast pork. Which brings us back to the Catskill Mountains. Because there was a place in the Catskill Mountains that was famous for serving roast pork on garlic bread, which we, the busboys and waiters, would eat around midnight. Because the people who went to the hotels ate the worst food on earth. We figured we had to better them. So instead of eating the food that they served in the hotel, after we got off duty at midnight, I think we go to the town. I don't remember the town, but there was one guy who made a fortune. Because this is a very funny thing. He served roast pork on garlic bread. It became such a hit. Such a gigantic hit. And most of the people who liked it the most are dead today as a result of heart attacks. Little did they know that they were clogging their arteries. But that's a separate story because many of them became cardiologists. They thought they were immune. It's like guys who specialize in a certain disease often die of it. That's something I discovered in graduate school. The first time I saw that people who are obsessed with certain diseases actually, I think on a higher level, die of them. They have an intuitive knowledge that that's what they're going to die from. They go in the field. So it's an interesting phenomenon. I remember when I was first in graduate school in pharmacology, I had an SOB for a department chairman. I'm glad he died young. I'll be honest with you. He got what he deserved, and he died a horrible death. I'm not saying I'm glad that happened, but on the other hand, when it happened, I was not unhappy. Let's put it to you that he was such a miserable, evil man. Did I tell you that story? I had no money. I had a very, very tiny $300 a month, I forget what fellowship it was, to go to like for a year to study for a master's degree. So I'm working in this guy's laboratory, and he says to me, all right, your job is going to be to kill mice that we're experimenting on. You're going to take a thing, and you're going to put it in the back of their head, and you're going to pith them and kill them for the science. I said, I'm not doing it. He said, no, you're going to kill the mice, and that's what you got to do. That's your job. I said, I'm not going to do it. So he said to me, I'm going to tell you something, Michael. Either you're going to kill the mice, or I'm throwing you out of the course and out of the laboratory, and you're going to lose your fellowship. He knew we didn't have a dime other than the $300 a month fellowship. And he knew that if I lost it, I was broke. I had nothing. I said, well, you could throw me out if you want. I said, but I'm not going to kill the mice. I said, I may eat animals. I'm not going to torture an animal for your pleasure here in a laboratory. So he threw me out of the laboratory because I wouldn't kill the mice. I had nothing. That was the beginning of one of the luckiest breaks of my life, because I wandered the halls of Leahy Hospital, where this was going on in Honolulu, and I went down in the basement. I didn't get depressed. I said, this is horrible. I have no money. What am I going to do? And I noticed there were jars of herbs all over the wall in the showcases that said Samoa, Fiji, Tonga, herbs and leaves and roots. And I went and knocked on a professor's door, and I asked him, what are those things? Because I came from New York, where to me a plant was a lettuce or a tomato. I didn't even know that there were more species than a lettuce or a tomato.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Joining us now is an attorney in Washington, D.C., Thomas A. Pavlinek, who specializes in defending the falsely accused. Mr. Pavlinek, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be back. It's an important message that you're sending, and it's the passion of my life. That's all I do. My practice is limited to representing people who've been falsely accused. And my practice gets sometimes 20 to 25 calls a day through our website from people across the country reaching out to us for help. That's a staggering amount.
Give us your website.
My website is Premier Defense Group. PREMIER, Premier Defense Group, www.premierdefensegroup.com. .com, that's correct.
All right, so give us the next big case of a man falsely accused and how you defended him, please.
Yeah, it comes right to mind. I represented a school psychologist out of Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, and he was accused by his adopted son of multiple rapes. And the rapes were supposed to have gone on for 7 years. And when the case went to trial, there was no medical evidence to support anything that was said, nothing. And this young man had gone to court numerous times complaining about other problems that he was having with people. And he didn't bring these allegations against his stepfather until his stepfather got tired of bailing him out of jail and getting lawyers for him and finally said to him, you know, son, you're on your own. And he went in to the police when he was 22 years of age and said his father had been sexually abusing him from ages 9 to 17. And he was making those allegations 13 years later.
So how did you defend this case?
How did I defend it? Well, we brought in a top-notch gastroenterologist from Washington, D.C., Ken Brown, to come to Pittsburgh to testify as many times as this young man said, 600 times, he would have had all of these medical problems. And there were no medical problems. In addition to that, the client had his own children testify that there was none of this abuse took place. Plus, we had pictures and other independent members of the family to establish what a good kid he was all through his high school years. But when the client was arrested in 2003, the trial didn't take place until 2010. The trial lasted 16 days. The jury deliberated for 4 days, and he was found not guilty of all counts. But it bankrupted him, Mike. He lost his position. We're now in the position of getting back his school position, his psychological license. He went bankrupt. It was a very humiliating and depressing time for him. But he had a lot of metal. He fought every step of the way, and I had a really good co-counsel with me, Tim Lucas, who we worked in.
Tom, a couple of questions come to mind, Tom. The boy who made these false accusations, he got off scot-free?
Nothing happened to him. He went back to wherever he was. Nothing happened to him. Nothing.
Okay, so the laws need to be changed, number one, but the victims' rights mafia will never permit victims who falsely accuse individuals of ever being accountable because they will claim that that will put a damper on them coming forward. And they'll be afraid to make such a statement. And American jurisprudence doesn't permit that. I know what's going to come from this. Now, one other question. Why did the case take 7 years to come to trial?
It's very unusual, and that's a very good question. Pennsylvania has what they call interlocutory appeals. And there's an evidentiary point which the trial judge ruled in our favor, and the Commonwealth asked that it be appealed. And that appeal took 2 years. And in addition, another reason was that the child's natural mother, who was married to my client, initially was accused by her son of the same, you know, grotesque acts, and she denied it. And this is probably one of the most perversions of justice. On the day we were supposed to go to trial, the prosecution gave her the ability to take a plea to endangering the welfare of the children, a child, and get a suspended sentence, no jail time, if she would testify against her husband. And then we had that delayed the case another year. And even though the wife testified against her husband, the jury saw right through that because she had real mental and emotional problems. And
my God, what a mess. So we're living in a witch hunt age where any child, anyone really can accuse anybody of anything, really, is what it comes down to. And so how you defend yourself against this is a interesting story. You can do so, but your life is ruined anyway.
Well, you know, what are the police going to do? There's no evidence. But the evidence comes from just somebody saying it. That's what's so frustrating to us to defend these type of cases, because all you have to do is say it. And then you could be arrested. You could lose your job, your security clearance. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you're going to be deported automatically. It doesn't make any difference what your family circumstances are. If you get convicted of a sex crime in the United States of America and you are not a U.S. citizen, you're gone. There's no way that you're going to be able to prevent yourself.
All right, so let's take it back to the case of the rich Frenchman, the IMF guy. Does he have an easy or a very difficult case to prove his innocence?
Well, his case is a little bit different, Mike, because that's an allegation being made by an adult.
Yes.
And it would have to, whether or not there would be any DNA evidence. Now, I mean, I'm just following what I hear in the press. If they're trying to say that there's some DNA evidence, it's hard for me to comment on that because I'm one of the few people that still believes in the presumption of innocence. Until somebody comes forth and says, here's the evidence, and this is evidence beyond a reasonable doubt, I'm assuming that this man is innocent. He would then have to be proven guilty. And if there was some DNA evidence, for example, that she said something on an article of her clothing, and they find that, then that would be evidence that would tilt in favor of the prosecution.
But wait a minute. It still wouldn't. It's from my point of view as a layman, even if his DNA in the form of semen was found on any article of her clothing, it still wouldn't indicate that he raped her. It could have been consensual. She could have agreed to perform a sex act with him for money and then, of course, used that to induce him and then turned on him simply for personal gain. Why can't we assume that she did that?
Well, that's a theory that would have to be developed by his attorneys after they look at all the evidence. And
I understand his defense attorneys, I think it's Bronfman and others, are actually looking at her life back in Guyana. Or Guinea, rather, in Africa, meaning she's a devout Muslim here, but we don't know what she was there. And so, therefore, they're trying to find out if this woman had a sordid life that might indicate behavior other than what she's proposing here. Again, this is a very frightening situation that a man can find himself in, is it not?
Yes, it is. One thing that he has going for him is that he has the financial resources to hire competent counsel who can do that. Just think of the poor guy that's a laborer, or a carpenter, or a house painter, making maybe $35,000, $40,000 a year, and he's got a family to support. He gets accused. What does that poor soul do? He doesn't have the money to do that type of thing. So he has to either get public defender or, you know, an attorney who will take the case on pro bono. How do you get the experts to come in?
But isn't it true that there's a presumption of guilt the minute someone is accused? Are they not immediately castigated by the media?
Yes. That's absolutely
yes.
correct. In my website, I say that you're presumed guilty. And when you go into the courtroom, you look at the courtroom personnel, how they treat you, and how the whole ambiance of the sheriffs and the bailiffs, they look at you like this guy must be some sort of a pervert. And yes, it's the standard of proof is reversed. You've got to go to court, and you've got to be aggressive in your defense of these people, otherwise they're going to be found guilty. You just can't sit back and hope that they're not going to prove their case. You've got to aggressively, you know, we take these cases, we put 100, 200 hours into the defense of them, and we bring in a team, we do a PowerPoint presentation, because it's my life, it's my passion.
What is it, so this must cost at least a few $100,000, correct?
Well, the defenses can run between $50,000 and $100,000, and if you get into stratospheric defenses, involving international...
I got to tell you this. You know, Tom, I've been falsely accused in England of being associated with murderers and terrorists. You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know that I've spent over $200,000 of my defense fund money, if not more, and I've not even gotten a hearing in England? They refused to even hear my case. Do you know that? They have completely reversed all of the rules of courts, of the Magna Carta, of freedom of the press, freedom of speech. Everything is upside down. It's Alice in Wonderland. I've spent well over $200,000, and they refuse, this government under Cameron refuses to even acknowledge that I might not be guilty as charged. Would you believe this?
Well, that you're this is the plight of many others who are in that situation, who have spent their life savings and they've gone bankrupt, and I empathize with you because I've seen that happen to my very own clients, not on the same scale, on a lesser scale. Nonetheless, the impact on these people is the same as it has been on you and others like you.
Well, I'm not begging anyone. I'm just saying that these things do cost a lot of money, but if you're dealing with a rigged system, as we have in America, it's rigged against the accused. And in England, they've completely reversed their laws of jurisprudence, where they're now something out of the Salem witch trial age, where you have to prove yourself innocent when they've assumed you are guilty without any trial whatsoever, without any evidence, without any discovery, without even meeting you or hearing from you. They say, Jacques Hughes, it's something out of the ex-Soviet Union. Anyway, your law firm is one of many, several rather, not many in the country, I'd imagine, PremierDefenseGroup.com. All I can say is, Tom, thank you for making this a passion of your life.
Savage.
Desperate Republicans and their well-funded allies are organizing angry mobs, just like they did during the election. This mob activity is straight from the playbook of high-level Republican political operatives. They have no plan for moving our country forward, so they've called out the mob. Call the Republican Party. Tell them you've had enough of the mob. The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. And get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Savage.
Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, Let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in the inner ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
Talk about issues that matter to the people, other than issues such as the economy, which are number one in some ways. But is it number one? I mean, what does it profiteth a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? Do you remember that statement? What a good, of all the riches in the world, if you end up like George Soros, a man without a soul, in my opinion. A soulless ghoul, that no matter how much money that man has, it's not enough for him because he wants more power over the people. That's an example of what Jesus was talking about. What does it profiteth a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? So, yeah, the economy is real important. We know that. But is it the only thing? Is it all there is the dollar? Well, then if that's all there is, then get ready for Cambodia, USA, with 13-year-old and 8-year-old and 7-year-old girls as prostitutes, and you're going to look the other way and say, well, it's only a business. Is that what you're going to say? It's only a business? Well, it gives the poor child some income. That's what you're going to argue? Chicago, Ann, welcome to the Savage Nation on the prostitution issue. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you? I was a prostitute at one time.
Right, and so where do you stand, legal or not legal?
Don't legalize it now, no. It's
why?
Not good. It's, the girls nowadays are not like it used to be. They're very dirty. They'll hurt you. And some of them are so, like you were talking, they're so young. You know, it breaks my heart now knowing what I know, and I feel sorry for them.
So you worked in the golden age of prostitution.
Right. Well, in the late 70s, mid-80s.
Well, I can't comment because I don't know what the difference between then and now is. I don't quite understand the difference. It was always a harsh world, so far as I know. So look how we're talking about a subject like this where I see on television a psychologist is saying that all these sex scandals, they're sex addicts, they're hypersexual, it's a sexual disorder. They're going to call it hypersexual disorder and put it into the DSM. And I'm saying, this can't be so. This is social engineering. Of course there are addictions related to sexuality. We know that. But just because a man has a high sex drive doesn't mean he's sick and suffering from a hypersexual disorder that should be in a DSM, because it's the road to society, again, controlling your sexuality by medicating you, for example, or saying that you need to go into therapy. And this is, again, social control, which as you well know, I drastically oppose. I fear social control at every level. I was speaking today again to someone, and I said, you know, if you analyze my politics, if you really analyze Michael Savage's politics, they're not really different than the classic liberalism of the 1960s. When you analyze that, or classic, they call it libertarianism. What does my philosophy really boil down to, which is leave me alone, don't tell me what to think, don't tell me what to do, don't legislate what I can do, don't tax me to death, and don't give me red tape to death. That's really my philosophy. So now they put me in a box already. I'm a right-winger. So how is it that the left-wingers of today want big government, they want government regulation of every aspect of your life, they want high taxation, they want a government, the red tape wherever you turn. They want to control what you say, what you think, and what you do. So does that make them liberals? No, they're not liberals. They're not progressives, people who think that way. They're the opposite of what they say they are. So don't be deceived. Buyer beware. You know what I mean? Caveat emptor. Buyer beware. You're not buying liberalism if you fall into that school. You're buying some form of totalitarianism, which is why I oppose Obama's Marxism. Chicago, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, I want to talk about transferring sexual energy. I'm 35. A couple of years ago, I tried to count how many women I've been with, and I was thinking it was about 450. I know I had like 100 and some after college, but by the time I was through college, and it kind of shocked me. So I started, I found a book, something about Write Your Feelings. I get to the bottom of it, and I ended up writing a book I'll never get published. But
right.
To me, it's a brilliant book. I'm not going to publish it.
450. You're saying you're writing the book or you read the book?
I wrote it. I wrote a book, kind of. You've written a book. You know how very cleansing writing is.
I've written 28 books. I've been writing since I'm 16 years old in one form or another. It is absolutely one of the greatest outlets for an active mind. But are you still driven the same way towards women?
No. After I kind of found something writing that story, that book, up being about 300 pages on my computer. And
What a loss you are to the women of Chicago, though. They don't know which way.
I doubt it. But
450 women, man, that's a lot of notches in the belt. But the next time you run into an old friend who's trying to tell you that you went down the wrong road because you got married and you stayed faithful and you raised children and you have children and or grandchildren, and he was the wild one, all you got to do is not get mad, just smile at him and say, really, Morris, all that sex and no children, how sad. And believe me, you will make your point. Well, I don't know how we got here, but sometimes you wind up where you don't intend to go, and I think we wound up in a good place together. I'm starting to sound like a touchy-feely therapist now, but but I'm going to say something to you that most therapists say at the conclusion of a session, which is...